Blog Talk Radio, a place where it's all about duty, honor, and country. Today is Thursday, March 27th, 2014. My name is Sally Baptist. Thank you for tuning in to this week's edition of Smart Talk Election 2014, Know Your Candidates. The call-in number is 347-857-4364. Make sure you press 1 to be put in the host queue, and we'll let you ask your questions on the air, or you can go into the chat room and submit your questions and comments in there. Tonight we have a very special guest, but before we introduce our guest, I have a couple of points I want to make, and you think about that as we go through tonight's show. One, the informed voter always makes the right decision. If you are not going to be an informed voter, would you please stay home? We don't need you. You're a danger. You're a threat to us. Two, own your vote. Stop selling it out to the political establishment. They have not been working on your behalf. They work for themselves, and there's truly no difference between the two biggies. There is no difference between a Republican and a Democrat. They are truly the Progressive National Committee these days. So own your own vote. Do not sell it out to the crazy political establishment. And three, this is so important, please keep this in mind. As we talk tonight, we must dethrone Rick Scott in 2014. One term of Rick Scott is more than I can handle. It's more than any of us can handle. He is doing all sorts of crazy stuff out there, like Amendment 1, this massive land grab. It's more important for him to use BP money to buy up land than it is to fix our infrastructure. And he's literally selling us out to China left and right. We have got to get rid of Rick Scott this year, dethrone him this year in the election. And on that note, I'm going to hand this over to our host, Sherry Smart and Neil Rife. Sherry, it is all yours, and I'm going to sit here enjoying the show tonight.
Thank you so much, Sally. And our guest tonight is the future governor of Florida. He's going to turn things around, and we're going to get behind him and rally behind him, and his name is Adrian Wiley. Thank you to the show, Adrian. Welcome to the show, and thank you for being here.
Thanks, Sherry. Neil, great to be with you guys, and thanks, Sally.
Hi.
Thank you.
So we're talking about the election, and we understand how important it is, and we're not bashing a particular candidate like Governor Scott. We're bashing the party. We're looking at it, and we don't see any difference between either party. So when people want to hold the Republican flag or their Democrat flag, we're asking them to please, you know, for a moment, we just stop, take a deep collective breath, and look at reality. Look at what is really happening out there. There is no difference between the parties. If you are a staunch Democrat, the Democrat Party abandoned you a long time ago. If you're a staunch Republican, you better look around. They abandoned you as well. And the only true voice that we have for real liberty and freedom in our country is going to come from Adrian Wiley.
Wow. Thank you. I don't know that I'm the only voice for liberty out there, but I'm proud to say that I'm one of a chorus growing for us. Yeah, but you hit the nail on the head. You know, when you really analyze the policies from the Republicans, from the Democrats, their campaign rhetoric differs, but when they actually get into office, they do the exact same thing. Whether you're talking about on a state scale, whether you're talking about on a federal scale, you see the same things over and over. It's all of the policies that are leading towards a decimation of our rights, a collapse of our economy, and drifting so far away from a constitutionally limited government that it's hard to even recognize the form of government that we have today.
And how do we get them to remove the scales from their eyes? I just had a conversation earlier today. I was in another county attending a comprehensive plan meeting, talking to an individual and talking about you, in fact. And he said, oh, my gosh, I saw him. He's just really, really great. But he's going to destroy what's happening. We're going to end up with Crist in office.
You know, I find it funny, the whole split the vote thing. And first of all, let me say that our polling numbers show that we're drawing equally from Democrats and Republicans.
Thank you for saying that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The numbers bear it out. But we're pulling a much larger segment from no party affiliation voters, independent voters, that sort of thing. Right now, we're polling at 16%, and we only need to get to 34% to win. And in the polls that we're seeing, there's about 17 to 22% undecided, depending on the poll. So this is a real opportunity. And as far as, you know, well, I'd like to vote for Adrian, but I can't because I'm afraid that this guy or this guy will win. I'd like to remind everyone that these guys are almost identical.
Thank you.
You know, you have conservatives talking about, well, you know, we've got to keep Rick Scott in office because, you know, he'll cut taxes and he's a fiscal conservative. He raised the budget by over $8 billion since he's been in office. Now, Charlie Crist, if you want to compare the two, he only raised the budget by, I believe, $3 billion while he was in office. So if that's your benchmark, maybe Charlie Crist is the better fiscal conservative. But by contrast, I want to cut the state budget by 30%. And when we do that, we can do a lot of things to really stimulate the economy, create the environment for business growth, new jobs, and really get ourselves out of this economic malaise that we've been in since 2007, 2008.
So maybe the tagline should be, afraid of a third party, libertarian third party, have no fear. It's the only true second party. Because everybody's saying that we need a two-party system, we can't have three parties. Well, then just let people know, okay, great. Okay, the libertarian party is giving you a second party because the Dems and the Republicans are in bed together. And like
we've
you said, that was different rhetoric, but once
that,
they're in office and they stand up to take a vote, you don't see the color of their socks. They're all the same party, the political party.
Yeah, that's really it. It's the political establishment versus the rest of us. But it's funny that you said that. We are working on a marketing campaign. We put out a little bit about it being a two-party system, the Republicrats and the Libertarians.
Okay, good. Good, good, because that's I think that's what we're going to have to continually say to people, because when they're always giving excuses for Governor Scott's behavior, you know, they're rallying to his defense when he throws a dog a bone, and then it's like, well, why am I hearing crickets for all the other stuff? Oh, well, he's got to work. Really? You've got to what? We have compromised ourselves to the point that we are in a corner, in a box, and it's starting to stink, and, you know, the only way out is going to be through a whole new avenue. We can't look to the Democrats and Republicans to rescue us anymore.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think the people are starting to wake up to the fact that there's really no difference. It's funny, when I'm out on the campaign trail, we'll do a lot of street festivals and things like that. And, you know, someone will introduce me, say, this is Adrian Wiley, he's running for governor. And the first question they inevitably ask is, are you a Republican or a Democrat? They usually got a stern look on their face.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I say I'm a Libertarian, and their whole expression changes. They're just thrilled. They're like, oh, that's great. So people, I really believe people are ready, and the poll numbers bear that out. 42% of Americans now identify themselves as Libertarian or Independent. So it's really, there's a growing segment that is disillusioned and disenfranchised with the major two parties, and they're looking for something else. And that's why the Libertarian Party is growing exponentially lately.
Yeah, and so now we're going to segue into something else. We're going to talk about smart meters and the PSC. They seem to be in the back pocket of Florida Power and Light. They don't seem to really be working for the consumer. As governor, what could you do about that? Because aren't those guys appointed?
Oh, yeah. The members of the PSC are appointed, and there's absolutely no doubt that they have a far too cozy relationship with the energy monopolies. My position is going to be to do everything possible to introduce competition, to break up the monopolistic nature of energy deployment in Florida, and find ways so that people can really have the benefits of competition. And I think that it's a long battle because there's a lot of infrastructure in place. There's a lot of things that needs to be hashed out. But we need to take those first steps towards making the people of Florida on an individual level energy independent, and I think we can do that. And specifically about smart meters, you know, that was a prime example where they did that without any consumer input whatsoever. They made it difficult or nearly impossible to opt out if you didn't want a smart meter on your house. It's just they pushed that through, and they tried to fly under the radar, and people did start objecting, and then they eventually had a policy where they could, you know, you could opt out, but you have to jump through a whole lot of hoops to do it. And the PSC just, you know, wrote everything off like, oh, yeah, fine, do whatever you want. That's not the kind of thing we can have. We need the consumer should be the one making the decision. The consumer should have choices and a say in the electricity that they're paying for.
Absolutely. So now when you're elected, this is another concern of mine because I've really worked hard for certain candidates. They get in and then, oh, my gosh, a year later they have transformed or what I call become. You know, everything changed, and I don't know if it changed because of staff. And I think of staff as a staff infection, almost a disease. These people are in there. There's no uprooting them. They have their own elite organization. I went to a meeting today about in a county regarding a comprehensive plan. Now, staff was there. The ratio of staff to, like, someone like me was, they had 2.3 staff members per person there at the meeting. Most of them were attorneys on the staff. They were referring to the upcoming election as silly time. Oh, we're approaching that silly time, so we won't get much accomplished. We'll have to wait till after the vote, and then we'll go on with our stuff, which was saying to me, it was telegraphing to me, nothing's going to change. It doesn't matter who's going to be in office because staff's in control.
Well, yeah, that's absolutely right. In fact, I don't know if you're familiar with the Second Amendment Preservation Act, that the Libertarians worked on, several other, there was a coalition of groups that worked on getting that introduced in legislature this year. Rick Scott, the rumor is, and I haven't confirmed this, but the rumor is that Rick Scott went to the legislature and said, that bill will not be going on my desk this year. I don't want any controversial bills on my desk during an election year. And, you know, that is, it would have prohibited state law enforcement, state agencies from assisting in any way the federal government if they are infringing upon the Second Amendment. So, you know, you would think this would be a bill that Republicans would get behind, but it was actually the Republicans, along with the state NRA, Marion Hammer, that killed this bill. Yeah. So, you know, you're absolutely right. It's these people that you thought you could trust, like Rick Scott. A lot of people thought that he was a constitutionalist, and, man, that has turned out not to be the case. And, you know, the NRA, that was an organization that we thought we could trust to truly stand up for the Second Amendment. And this is an example of them taking the political low road rather than doing the right thing and standing up for our liberty.
Now, what can we do is just Joe Blows out there, people, you know, that are concerned and really want to see in office. What can we do to help out? I mean, we posted on Facebook. We have you on Blog Talk Radio. We write articles about you. What else can we do? I mean, how organized are your campaign people? Are they getting out and physically walking door to door? I mean, this is so important, so crucial, because I walk and bump into people all the time. They've never heard of you, and that just stresses me to no end.
Well, we have got a very solid campaign team in place, and we've got a great grassroots plan to win this election.
Great.
What we're doing is we're doing it through the precinct plan. What we're doing is we're recruiting 6,000 precinct captains statewide, one for every precinct in the state. And if each of those people is willing to contact 300 people, and that's roughly in terms of work, that's an hour a week between now and the election.
Okay.
If we can do that, regardless of how much Rick Scott and Charlie Crist spend, regardless of how hard the media tries to ignore us, we can win this election. And we're actually going to be making a very big announcement tomorrow night, some great news for the campaign. But I can tell you that this is a very, very real campaign. We are in this race to win, and we are we have a plan to actually achieve it. We're not just out there to try to steer the discussion. We're aiming to win this election, put liberty in Tallahassee, and we've got a plan to do it. And what people listening out there can do to help, sign up to be one of those precinct captains. Take over your own precinct and just commit 1 hour per week, just 1 hour per week between now and the election. Reach out to 300 of your neighbors, because your precinct is essentially your neighborhood.
Right.
If you're willing to do that, and if we can get, you know, 6,000 people just like you doing the same thing, we win. Right now we're somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,000, and that number is growing fast.
Good, good, good. Mm-hmm. Now, once you're in office here, I keep coming back to that you're already in, because I'm concerned that once you're in, I want you in, so, yeah, we're going to all, I think Sally, Neil, and I will all work really hard to get you there. And then once you're there, what are going to be the pitfalls? Because you're going to come against a ton of opposition, all the lobbyists, the staffers, all the other people, the sore losers that, you know, because I watch it happen here locally with candidates that run, they get in, and then the people that ran just sit there and continue to harangue them and set booby traps for them. What can we do to support you once you're in office? Because we know that you're going to be inundated with lobbyists. We know that you're going to be hearing so much input. But you, to me, sound so grounded and so rooted in what you want to do that it's going to be hard to dissuade you. But then, you know, I'd like to see you surrounded with people that are like-minded, that are not going to contaminate you. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that is one of my biggest fears, because nobody, I don't believe, is above corruption. Everybody needs that support base to stay on the right path. And so I'm going to be counting on my friends, my colleagues, my supporters to keep me on the right path. Now, I'm also planning to do some things to ensure that that happens. For example, every conversation that I have with a special interest group, with a lobbyist, anything like that, we're going to set up cameras in the governor's office, and it's going to be streamed live on the Internet.
Wow,
so
I love that.
There's not going to be any dirty dealings like that. If these guys are coming to me trying to do something underhanded or trying to play games, it's going to be out there for everyone to see. So that is going to discourage them from even attempting to, you know, play dirty, so to speak. Now, how are we going to get it done? Because I will be the most hated man in Tallahassee. There's absolutely no doubt about that.
Yes.
Everybody in the legislature is going to hate me. All the lobbyists are going to hate me. All the special interests are going to hate me. So how do we overcome that?
Right.
Well, one of the reasons that I'm running for governor is because of the veto power. Now, I've already said that my criteria for vetoing any bill is it constitutional? If it's unconstitutional, it immediately gets vetoed. Can we afford it? If we can't afford it, it gets vetoed. Is it a necessary and proper role of government? If it's not, it gets vetoed. And does it solve the root cause of the problem? Or are we just putting a Band-Aid fix on stuff? So those are my four veto criteria. And I've been watching legislation for a long time, and I can tell you that 90% of the bills that come out of Tallahassee fail on at least one of those criteria. So essentially, I will be vetoing the vast majority of the legislation coming out of there. So what the legislature is going to have to do is the first year, nothing's going to happen. I can pretty much guarantee the legislature is not even going to hear any of my initiatives, but by the same token, nothing is getting signed by me either. They're going to have to override a veto on absolutely everything.
Okay.
I think the second year we'll be able to start actually negotiating and saying, okay, now if we want to move forward, here are my initiatives that we're going to get done, and we'll talk about what you guys want to get done as well. We'll find a common ground after that once they know that I'm serious.
See, and I think that's commendable because you're coming, and I think that's smart as well, because to go in and actually start making changes, lopping off heads and stuff when you really don't know the cast of characters is not wise. I'm hoping that once you get in, you'll be able to get rid of a lot of staff. but it's going to take you a year to sift through to figure out who's someone that's viable and important and who's not. Because I watch a lot of empire building going on, and I'm sure you do as well, that you're sitting there watching a lot of busy work that really isn't necessary. Those people would be much more productive out in the private sector. Get them off the public dole.
Right.
Then the other thing is, what are you going to do with Common Core, for instance? Governor Scott keeps skirting around it. But when you look at it, there's no way we can pay for this thing. It's a boondoggle.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's not only is it the cost, I don't want the federal government taking over our education system. I don't want biometric scanning in the classroom. I don't want our kids learning math in such a way where it takes 10 minutes to solve a simple addition or subtraction. And I don't want kindergartners having to, take psychological evaluations by some social worker. It's not how we want to handle our schools. We should be returning the control to the local communities in the schools, not pushing it up to the federal government. So I will do everything in my power to nullify Common Core, and if that means that we have to return the race to the top money, so be it.
Amen. Thank you. Now, is there anything you want to talk about? Because I brought up some subjects, so I know there's got to be things that you want to discuss as well that we're probably not aware of.
Oh, no. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have. You ask
me
any questions.
Okay, well, my other thing would be, who are you thinking of for your lieutenant governor?
Well, that's something I'm not ready to give names
okay.
at this point. But I will say that we have a short list of folks that we're considering at this point, and we'll probably be making that announcement closer to June.
Okay, that's interesting. Now, Neil probably wants to talk to something about the education system as well. She was giving me a story earlier today. Neil, do you want to talk about that?
Yes, one real concern that I have on this, Adrian, even in, because Common Core is just a word, it's the curriculum, and it's the manner in which it's being taught. Now, taking that into consideration, Rick Scott and our legislators and our Board of Education have decided to drop the name of Common Core standards and use Florida standards. So they're just switching the name, keeping the same curriculum. Now, if you want to drop this or get rid of it, keep in mind they've already put out the textbooks. They've already put out the workbooks that go with it and all the other material. That is going to be a job to get rid of all this false and lies that they're putting in our books. Totally tearing down the Constitution. I've seen many history books on this already. And this type of literature is going to have to get out of our schools in Florida.
Well, yeah, and that's actually relatively easy to do. I'll backtrack a little bit and tell the story about how they actually, and they did exactly what you're talking about. They don't call it Common Core in Florida. However, that's exactly what it is. Back in the legislative session last year, what happened is the Republicans put up a Common Core bill. It was a bill called Common Core, and it was a sacrificial lamb. They knew they were going to kill it because they knew that their base was totally opposed to it. So this bill died in committee. At the same time they were doing this, the Republicans in the state legislature, pushed along by Jeb Bush, were amending an unrelated bill, Senate Bill 1076. And what they did there is they changed the definition of Sunshine State standards, which we've been operating under for several years, and they included Common Core standards. They integrated it into Sunshine State standards. So technically we're operating under Sunshine State standards, but all the curriculum and all the requirements and mandates of Common Core are now included in that. Now, one of the reasons that Jeb Bush is pushing this bill so hard, or pushing this Common Core so hard, is because his brother Neil owns one of the two curriculum providers that are authorized to provide curriculum in the state of Florida, those textbooks you're talking about. What we do is we cancel the contracts. on those textbooks. And we go out and we put it back out for bid and we find someone else to provide curriculum that is more aligned with the standards of the community and with true, honest math, science, history, not the revisionist history that we're seeing in these textbooks. So it's easy to solve the problem. There's a clear path to solving the problem. We just effectively reverse that language in 1076, and we cancel the contracts. It's as simple as that. But, you know, like I said, because of the Bush family influence in this and the power they have over the Republican legislature, you know, it's going to be an uphill battle.
Right.
No, it really
well,
is.
One other question here. Excuse me, Sherry. One real concern of mine also is that there is a federal law, and this federal law states that any teaching and learning institute that receives federal funds is required to teach the Constitution in our schools and institutions on the week of September 17th. Now, I have contacted my superintendent a number of years ago on this issue. He knew nothing about it. And now he won't even return a call to me. He has his mechanic return any of my calls when I leave a message. I didn't see his mechanic's name on the ballot. I don't believe I voted for him. But my real concern is that this law is carried out. Our children have got to understand this Constitution. They've got to understand it was written for we the people to protect us and to limit our government in what they can do. And I think that there's been so much damage done now in what they've been being taught that instead of teaching this evolution science myth, they need to drop that completely because that destroys a child's mind as far as Christianity. And I don't think that's a class that's necessary for them to pass to get a diploma. But I think they not start teaching the Constitution in school. Let's get back on the right track here. Are
well,
you aware of that law at all? Or
yeah, I've heard that before. I haven't read the law.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, let me say that I don't like any federal funding with strings attached, but that's one of the few times where federal funding with strings attached is actually a good thing. We absolutely must teach the Constitution in our classrooms. Regarding evolution, though, I wouldn't suggest we teach creationism. I am a Christian, born-again Christian. I actually have kind of a hybrid belief in that you know, evolution and creation, Genesis align pretty well. But, you know, the point is I think that parents have the option for teaching creationism in private school, homeschool environments, if so. So I wouldn't push for that. I just want you to know that, Neil. As far as teaching the Constitution, absolutely. We need to be teaching our children the Constitution in our classrooms. It is critical for them to understand what their unalienable rights as human beings are.
Well, why I mention that evolution, Adrian, is mainly because I am getting the excuse from the Board of Education in Tallahassee. They don't have time to teach true history and other meaningful issues that our children are going to be able to elevate themselves as they get out of school and proceed on with their lives. And I do not see where evolution has any meaningful result to help them prepare for the future.
Well, I understand your position on that, but like I said, I have no problem with the teaching of evolution in schools. But, you know, like I said, there are so many things, you're right in general, that there are so many things that our kids should be learning that they're not, and they are learning several things that are more political philosophy than they are hard science, hard history, and things of that nature. So, you know, let's get back to real curriculum and teach our children both the facts of the world as well as give them the ability to come out as creative thinking adults, and you know, not just, unfortunately, automatons that have just been drilled for rote memorization.
Right, and I read an interesting article out of Lou Rockwell's group of contributors, and it was talking about our public school system that, according to the financial situation and everything, in 10 years, they'll be obsolete. So we're almost talking about a dinosaur here, because the way things are progressing and evolving, that public schools are not going to be seen as being viable any longer. What with our technological age, people are going to get a lot of information at home on their computers, that you're not going to really need that hands-on that they've been getting in schools, you know, getting in the bus, going into the classroom. Everybody's, you know, like a little drone. Instead, it'll be more individualized because you are home, and you can, you know, take up the study when you want, the studies when you want to. It's going to be an interesting evolution of how our society is changing, that it can go one of two ways. I personally am a big fan of the old one-room schoolhouse where you've got, you know, six-year-olds up with 16-year-olds, and everybody covers the same material. So if you miss something in the first grade, you're not being, you know, into the second grade. You forgot some of the first grade stuff, and uh-oh, we're not covering it anymore. But if you're all under the same roof, you're not embarrassed. You know, you're hearing the same stuff over and over again. So if you miss something, you've always got that building block, that backup, instead of being left behind. So we kind of lost that. So maybe we'll get it back with this new technology.
Yeah, well, I doubt we'll ever go back to the one-room schoolrooms. But I do
I don't think
that technology is definitely changing the way that we learn. You know, it's like I talk to my kids. The Internet... and this is the business I'm in. I'm an IT consultant. I've been, you know, using the Internet since back when people had no idea what it was. But it's absolutely amazing to me that virtually all the information that is has been generated throughout the entire history of man is available at our fingertips within seconds. I tell my kids that, you know, we were thrilled when our family got an Encyclopedia Britannica, because it meant we didn't have to go to the library as much.
You got that
so,
right.
this is just astounding. Anything that, you know, pops into your head, you can learn about on the fly. And I think that will change our educational model. It already has in the higher education. Look at how many colleges now are providing 100% online degrees. I know my son, who's in ninth grade, a lot of his homework is online. All the interfaces and tracking and assignments are online now. And I think that's going to continue to progress. And it's going to be interesting to see what the benefits are. There's obviously pros and cons with any type of new technology. It's going to be interesting to see where that goes. But I think, in general, it will be beneficial to our kids to have that technology, especially for kids who have grown up surrounded and immersed in that technology. I think it's going to be a good thing.
Right, and this is the thing that I find interesting. Here I'm going to all these different meetings, you know, these planning sessions, these visioning sessions, and no one's talking, like when they're talking about a comprehensive plan and they're planning for 50 years out, no one is giving consideration to technology. They're all acting as if we're still in the horse and buggy days, that we're in a society of lack of water, lack of this, lack of that. And I'm looking at these planners, these six attorneys that are all on staff that are writing things up, and I'm thinking, okay, have none of you heard about 3D printing, 4D printing? Have none of you paid attention to what's happening? We're in the midst of a revolution with technology. So where you think there's lack, it's unbelievable potential. And they're concerned about population growth and this and that. And I'm thinking, don't you understand? With the new technology, we're going to be able to accommodate all of that. When you, Neil and I have been talking about hydroponic planting, that on 1 acre of land you can grow up to 3 to 6 acres of food, and you have a minimal impact on the environment. So we're getting so smart about how to do things. So instead of living with all this fear, it's like, please, people, take the blinders off. You know, you've got these radical environmentalists, and I listened to three of them today in this meeting, and I thought my blood pressure, it was just unbelievable listening to them talk about environmentally sensitive lands and how you can't do this to it and you can't do that to it. And so finally she said, right, I don't want people building anywhere. And that was her comment. And I'm thinking, but wait a minute. We have a lot going on where we've already built up that is left abandoned. Why are we looking at things so negatively instead of the hope that's out there and looking at it a different way? Why do they always think that man, the human being, is hurting the environment? Well, in many ways,
well,
we're helping it. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
That philosophy is definitely out there, and you know, it's almost like an anti-humanist movement in a lot of cases.
That's what I heard today. Absolutely.
Yeah, but then again, you know, there are a lot of ways that we can address the issues that are important to environmentalists without telling people where they have to live, without telling people that you can't have a car, and you know, that's the thing. We can solve a lot of these problems while still maintaining everyone's, you know, inherent freedom. And unfortunately, you know, there are a lot of environmentalists out there that are very rational, looking for the right solutions, but there are some that are just so radical in their beliefs and you know, look at humans as a parasite instead of being part of the natural ecosystem of the planet. And that's a sad thing. And those are the types of people that are really working against everybody else.
Oh, absolutely. When you look at pure science and the grand scope of things, and they're so concerned about our cars and our air conditioners and what we're doing, and then you think of, okay, so my carbon footprint, and then when you look in terms of one volcano, diminishes everything that man has done in just seconds. But they don't look at that science. They don't look at the fact that, my gosh, the planet itself is belching out things that we can't even begin to conceive of that are damaging the environment. So what are you going to do? Are you going to ticket? Are you going to cite a code and have a code violator? The code enforcement team go to the volcano and talk to them?
Well,
I mean, really, that's
the
extent. I'm sitting there listening to these people and thinking, my gosh, do you have no clue what the sun has an impact? The planet, earthquakes, volcanoes, they all have impacts way that are hurting the planet a lot more than you and I in our car.
Well, the thing is I'm kind of a wannabe astrophysicist. And there's only one source of energy in our entire solar system, and that's that big nuclear reactor in the sky that rises in the east and sets in the west. And minor variations within the normal parameters of solar cycles will have impacts on our climate. It's been happening throughout Earth's history. We're actually still coming out of the most recent ice age when you look at it on a geological scale.
Right.
So, you know, we're looking at, the analogy would be like looking at a single hair on a person's head and trying to determine everything about that person. And that's
exactly
what we're doing by taking data from, 100, 200 years and trying to extrapolate that into a geological cycle. It just can't be done. But the environmentalists are always turning to government control to solve the problem. And what they fail to realize is that it's government control that is the root cause of a lot of these problems. Case in point, we actually had Progress Energy before Duke Energy and Florida Atlantic University working on a project to anchor large turbines, electricity-generating turbines, to the Gulf and Atlantic floor off the coast of Florida to channel the energy of the Gulf Stream. And these turbines would produce a huge amount of electricity, and they would be able to power a significant portion of the state. It was completely clean, zero emissions, could have replaced a whole bunch of coal-burning plants. Yet, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, refused to allow the project to go ahead. The reason they cited is that they were afraid that the turbines would harm fish and marine mammals. So, you know, there's an example of the Environmental Protection Agency having the exact opposite effect of what is intended. You know, I sincerely believe that we should be looking at alternative energy sources. You know, like we were talking about, the sun is the source of all energy in the solar system. We should be harnessing that. We're in Florida. We should be using solar energy.
Well,
we
and Tesla,
doing it
using the grid lines, the magnetized grid lines on the Earth, that's unlimited
sure.
power. That's
yeah,
unlimited resources. It's absolutely free.
Yep. But it's when you look at it, you find that it's actually government regulation that is preventing so much of that from happening. You know, I can't put solar panels on my house and back feed the electricity grid with my surplus electricity here in Florida. Why? And those are the types of things. We need to take away some of that regulation so people can innovate and we can come up with solutions that both satisfy, you know, people's capitalistic drives and satisfies the concerns of the environmentalists. And that's what I intend to do as governor.
Well, let me jump in here a minute. When you're referring to the EPA, of course, there's the DEP. I mean, we're talking some very corrupt organizations here. But by whose authority do they have to do their own regulations, their own rulings, and be using our tax dollars? I mean, this to me, what they're doing is going totally against we the people, the Constitution. They are destroying not just our state, but our nation.
I agree 100%, Neil. I don't believe that the federal government has the authority to regulate anything within the borders of Florida, and that's why I'm proposing the Florida Interstate Commerce Act. As we know, the Commerce Clause of the Constitution does say that the federal government has the authority to regulate commerce between states. However, it has no authority to regulate commerce within the state. So my plan is to pass legislation that says anything that is manufactured, grown, fabricated, any service that originates and is sold within the state of Florida will be completely immune from any federal regulations whatsoever. It's similar to what Kansas just passed regarding firearms. They said if firearms are manufactured and sold in Kansas, the federal government has no authority to regulate them in any way. And the federal government actually backed down once they passed that legislation. Eric Holder came after them at first, but when Kansas held their ground, they backed off. And I believe that we can do the same thing here in Florida on a much broader scale. Under our authority and under the 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution and under the proper interpretation of the U.S. Constitution's Commerce Clause.
Okay.
So how many people, once you're in office, how many people will you be able to depend on that are going to be up in Tallahassee with you at that point in time? Do you know?
You know, I don't know the details yet of how large my staff will be, but the one thing I can tell you is I'm not going to fill it with attorneys and lobbyists and things like that. It's going to be filled with people who first and foremost understand the fundamental principles of liberty. They'll have to be people that I trust and can rely on and you know that if I'm asking for their advice, I'm getting solid advice based on strong core principles, not based on which way the political wind's blowing, not based on who's going to benefit financially from it. Those are how decisions are made today in Tallahassee, and that's part of the problem that we have, and that's something I intend to stop.
Well, I tell you what, we're going to have to surround you with heavy-duty prayers because you're up against some really dangerous people with a lot of power and almost a stranglehold of power in this state, and it's in every every county that I can think of, that it's so profoundly corrupt on multiple levels that it's very frustrating for people to look for a change and then, you know, have our hopes dashed. So you're going to need a lot of protective prayers around you once you're in office, and hopefully really good people will start stepping up and coming on board to assist you. Sally, did you have a question?
Actually, I have the topic of wanting the transportation. So when we get a good break, I want to talk transportation. But we do have a caller who has a question for you, so I thought I would go ahead and bring the caller in. The last four digits are 3921. Caller, you're on the air. Can we get your name, please?
Yeah, my name is Frank. And I've heard his statement. He was talking about the, you know, about keeping the federal government at bay on the Second Amendment. But what other plans do you have to insulate Florida from the insanity coming out of Washington?
Well, let's take another prime example. Our Fourth Amendment has been absolutely decimated in recent years by the federal government, Department of Homeland Security, NSA, TSA, you name it. We are being searched, surveilled, without warrant, without reason, and those are the sort of things I intend to put a stop to. Essentially, we have to understand that the federal government has no authority within a state that the state doesn't provide to them. Basically, everything that the federal government does within the territorial borders of a given state has to be with the compliance of that state, whether it's the local sheriff, whether it's the state law enforcement, what have you. We need to start putting a stop to what are the things, key things that I'll put an end to as quickly as I'm able to will be Real ID. That is where you go to the driver's license to renew your driver's license, and you have to submit all the documentation, birth certificate, original Social Security card, marriage license, divorce decree, bank statements, utility bills, and it's also where when you stand in front of the blue background, they no longer take a photograph. They're doing a digital facial image capture that is scanned into a national facial recognition database. We're going to put a stop to that. Red light cameras, another thing. I want to see red light cameras completely prohibited in Florida. It violates due process. You cannot face your accuser when your accuser is an inanimate object. So there's a lot of things like that that are just encroachments of our civil liberties, of our Fourth Amendment rights, our Fifth Amendment rights, that we need to put a stop to. I'm also a big opponent. I want to put a stop to the militarization of our police.
Yay!
It's getting really, really bad. I did a investigation into something called the Irregular Warfare Support Program. This is where U.S. military funding is going to train sheriff's offices and local law enforcement for combat operations and intelligence sharing. And it points to, in the case of some sort of insurrection, and we know who the people they think are the domestic terrorists are, according to the Department of Homeland Security, it's people who believe in the Constitution. So,
right.
You know, we've really, there's a lot of areas that we need to stop the federal government from usurping their constitutionally limited authority, and I can guarantee you I am the only person in this race that will stand up and do that.
Actually, now, one in particular that you didn't mention that I was hoping you'd mention is something like the EPA.
Oh, yeah. I guess you must not have heard what I was talking about before. The Florida
I missed part of it. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay. The Florida Interstate Commerce Act, which I spoke about before, would prohibit any federal government agency from regulating any business that occurred exclusively within the state of Florida. And we have the constitutional authority to do that. And that's what the EPA would be one of those agencies that would block. And we have to remember, it's the federal government. We've got all these issues right now. We've got the Koch brothers that are polluting the St. John's River. Well, the reason they're doing that is the EPA and the Florida Department of Environmental Protection gave them a special pass to do it. It's the Army Corps of Engineers that is discharging the surplus water from Lake Okeechobee, which is causing an environmental disaster in the St. Lucie Inlet and the Indian River Lagoon. So, you know, it's actually the federal government causing harm in our state. So if we actually stop them from operating in our state, we're going to be a whole lot better off.
I agree.
You know, and this is, those are the very things that we never hear in the mainstream media. We don't hear anything about this. So, unfortunately,
yeah,
people can't sit there and get behind you because they don't know.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And when you consider that, you know, so much of the mainstream media is owned by the same corporate entities that benefit from the preferential treatment by these government agencies, GE is a prime example. GE owns something like 20% of all mass media news in the United States, and they paid, despite making billions in profits, they pay zero corporate income tax. So they have a vested interest in ensuring that, you know, those politicians that are scratching their back and those government agencies that are scratching GE's back, they want to make sure not to throw them under the bus in their media affiliates. So that's the symbiotic, the incestuous relationship that we have.
Okay, let me step in here one more time while I can still get a chance here. I have a real problem, and I have been researching this for over a year, who's involved in it, what they're doing, and that is the state of Florida has regional councils, 11 of them, and they belong to the National Association of Regional Council, and on all of their websites, all of them, they have on there, and they admit it, the president admits it, that they are the voice of regionalism. Regionalism is communism. Regionalism has no borders. Regionalism is where we the people lose our representation. And in the state of Florida, there is not one county that is not under a regional plan with its own name. This has got to stop. It is unconstitutional according to Article 4, Section 4, where the government guarantees every state in the union a republic form of government. Well, when you have communism and you have no voice, you don't have anything anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And we see that more and more. That's actually a big push of the United Nations to set up non-governmental organizations, public-private partnerships, these quasi-governmental agencies that cross actual legal governmental boundaries, whether that be municipal, county, some cases even state. And, yeah, we just have to strip the authority from them. And really, they currently don't have that much authority at this point, but they're growing in power. And the legislatures seem to be behind them. Yeah, Rick Scott's a big proponent of them. The current Florida legislature
doesn't
have any problem with it.
Yeah, that are pushing regionalism in the state of Florida, and they're even putting other names on it to push it even further. The Department of Transportation in Florida is all on board with it. Several of your environmental groups, your big ones, they're all on board with it. And this is pure communism.
Yeah, and actually...
Yeah, well, the bottom line is these are not elected officials. So you
right.
have zero representation. So if that's going to be the case, then these groups cannot have any authority whatsoever to regulate you, to tax you, to have any say in your daily life. They don't have the authority. Now, they can get together and talk all they want and make suggestions, and that's their right under free association. But they do not have the authority to regulate or tax you.
Okay,
and
I've
got to
jump in here.
Don't.
Yeah, this is exactly, you've touched on about five of the points between you and Neil about what I was going to say when it comes to this transportation, because right here, it's Senate Bill 230 right now that they're out there pushing to pass this time around that would take the Orlando-Orange County Expressway Authority, which is a massive culture of corruption, a quasi-government board not elected by anyone, appointed by Scott's cronies, who's going to take over this whole Central Florida region, take over transportation of this whole region. That has to be stopped. That cannot be allowed to happen, but that's what they're doing right now, and it's going to happen this session if they get their way with it. So we really need to get that word out there. But transportation, they're doing that, the public-private partnerships, which are unconstitutional. I mean, from the state level as well, they're doing this all over the place, and transportation is one of the biggest crimes, I think, against the people of Florida. So what would you do to fix transportation and obviously shut down these quasi-governmental agencies like the Orlando Orange County Expressway Authority?
We defund them. And part of my 30% budget cut is getting rid of all of that. I have seen so much cronyism in these organizations. I have seen so many sweetheart contracts to somebody's brother-in-law. Rick Scott is the king of this. As we know, Rick Scott was pushing for drug testing of all state employees. Well, it turns out that his wife actually owns one of the largest drug testing companies in the state. And the only reason that his wife owns it is because the attorneys advised Rick Scott that he needed to transfer ownership of it to her to avoid a conflict of interest. And that's just one example. I can tell you, folks, I have seen firsthand dozens of examples and wrote an article about it, a quasi-satirical article not too long ago called Why Do We Have Potholes and Palm Trees on I-4? And it really goes through the process by which this happens, how they do the land grabs through, that's part of the reason Amendment 1. They want to grab more land. Why? So they can get the sweetheart contracts to all their buddies and get those land to them for cheap, and they're going to develop this, and then they get the state contract. I'm telling you, it is so corrupt, and the only way to stop it is to cut $21 billion of your tax dollars out of the budget that they think is their play money. Now, when we cut the state budget by 30%, we can do a lot of amazing things. One of the things that we can do is we can provide a 100% homestead tax exemption to every Florida family's primary residence. You don't pay a dime in property tax on your home. If I can get my budget cut, we can do this. And the way we do this is we just reallocate that unnecessary sales tax to the counties. The counties are fully funded. The state budget is 30% less, so we don't need as much tax money. And you get to keep an average of $1,500 more in your pocket. And these guys in these regional planning boards who are making billions off of you, they don't get their money anymore.
I love
Bravo.
It.
Bravo.
I love it. If people heard that message, you'd be elected tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're doing everything we can to get the message out there. And that's why I need volunteers so desperately. So if you like that, please consider being one of my precinct captains.
And who would they call to do that? Who would they get in touch with to be a volunteer? What number would they call?
The best thing to do is go to WileyForGovernor.com. WYLLIEFORGovernor.com, click on the Help Adrian tab, and it goes through exactly there. Fill out a form. We'll be in touch with you. We'll get you everything you need. We'll send you a packet of information. We'll set you up on a software system where you can see the names and addresses of your neighbors and get a walk list, a call list, everything. We have made this incredibly easy for you. We give you step-by-step instructions. All we need you to do is give us 1 hour a week between now and the election. Reach out to 300 of your friends and neighbors, and we can win this election.
So really it could add up to even a little more than an hour. If someone dedicated 15 minutes a day, Monday through Friday, 15 minutes a day, Monday through Friday would do it.
Absolutely. Well, I tell you, if you want to help more, that's fantastic. The minimum we're asking for is 1 hour a week.
And really, when you think of it in the long term, that's not much time at all. It'll fly by. And
you said, absolutely. You
have the software, so everything's really easy. You can do it. So I imagine from the software package that you're getting, you download it, and it's on your laptop, and then you'll just make phone calls or door walk?
No, it's all online. We'll set you up with a user account and password for our online system. We really have a state-of-the-art software system for people to use. We wanted to make sure we knew that we weren't going to have the millions for advertising. We weren't going to have the support of the media. So we wanted to give all the tools we could to our volunteers, and that's exactly what we've done.
That's
fantastic.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any yard signs yet?
No yard signs. Those will be coming closer to the election. If we put them out now, they'll just get stolen.
You got that
yeah,
right.
Okay.
Yeah, they get really vicious towards the end. It's amazing how things just disappear in a matter of hours.
Oh, yeah.
You can put it out and drive down the same street 2 hours later and gone.
Exactly.
I've seen it more than once.
Yeah. Well, it's 8 o'clock. I don't know if you have time to continue on, but this is our witching hour, and it's time for Sally's show, American Statesman. She takes over from this end. And so please, everybody that's listening, and please do not hang up, because now this next hour is Sally's hour.
Well, thank you. And, yes, Adrian, you are more than welcome to continue on sharing everything that you want to do for Florida if you'd like. Because I know you've got a lot of stuff out there. Take as much of this time. Take advantage of this time. And hopefully you can put a link on your website for people to come over here and listen to it or download it to have them listen so people can hear you, hear your plans and things like that as well. So, okay, thank you, Sherry. And, Neil, of course, you hang on if you want to. But, yes,
mm-hmm.
It's so important that we make changes here in Florida. The federal government is totally out of control. You know, most people don't understand public-private partnerships. They don't understand this collusion. And I'm telling you, this thing with the transportation, everybody knows me, knows the transportation has been my sore spot, if you want to call it that, pet peeve, like ScamRail, SunRail, ScamRail. What would you do to put a halt to that mess? Because we all know it's a boondoggle. They're going to be having this big old celebration in a couple of days here about the new SunRail, and it's a boondoggle. It's nothing but a bunch of it's a gravy train for CSX and John Mica and his cronies. What would you do about SunRail?
You know, I read that SunRail loses $4 of taxpayers' money for every rider. That's just another thing. We just simply defund it. Anything that we have the ability to defund on the state level that is not necessary, it's a non-essential, it's waste, it's fraud, it's abuse, it's redundancy, or it's one of these crony deals like that is, we're just going to take the money out of it and give it back or let the people of Florida keep it. Let them keep more of what they earn. That's exactly what the plan is. There is so much out there that we don't need to be spending money on. And I can tell you, my team and I, we're going through the state budget now. It's 374 pages of line items and a fine print as well. So it's a big challenge. But there's so much pork, so many boondoggles out there, and SunRail is one of many.
Okay, and when we talk transportation, you know what, I'm sure you know what they all say, especially when it comes to toll roads, and I have to tell you, in the past, my conversations with libertarians have been that they've been pro-toll roads because they were a user fee, but we know that's all nonsense. We know it's you know, you pay all three gas taxes, and now they're wanting to charge you a vehicle mile travel tax. That they want to put a GPS kind of gadget on your car, so when you fill up, they're gonna say how many miles you've driven. They want to charge you that tax, and then they want all these crazy taxes on these toll roads. I myself don't believe you should have a toll on the infrastructure like that. We need to make that highway system as efficient and inexpensive and accessible as possible because it is tied to so many things within the within our society. It's tied to the economy, it's tied to law enforcement, it's tied to emergency services, and it's tied to an overall quality of life. It's truly a lifeline to the economy and our national defense as well. So in the past, libertarians have said, oh, yeah, there should be private ownership of a highway. I disagree with that. Of course, what we have here is total massive collusion of the government and the private sector with these toll roads. Now that they want to put the toll on I-4, we need to get that stopped. And there's so many other ways that I know of that we can fund transportation, and I'll share those if you'd like. But say we want to phase out all these toll roads and get rid of these crony organizations like the Expressway Authority right here in Orlando. How do you propose to fund the roads and the highways? I have my own ideas. I see easy ways to do it. What would you do?
Well, first, let me just say I don't have any problem with toll roads per se. Where I have a problem is where they're getting a huge amount of taxpayer infusion. So it's basically the taxpayers getting hit twice, once when they're paying the tax money to build it or provide the special subsidies or what have you, and then again with the tolls themselves. If a private entity wants to purchase land, build a road, and put a toll on it, I support that 100%. It's these private-public partnerships where that just act as a money funneling tool that I have a problem with. So you know, it's the you know, it's funny because one of the libertarian catchphrases, if you will, is we're always getting asked, well, who will build the roads? Well, quite frankly, you know, I don't have a problem with government building roads if that's what the people want them to do. But, you know, what we've got right now is, just like you said, it's that collusion between the private sector and the government, and the ones who get the short end of the stick is us, the taxpayer.
Yeah, and I mean, in a perfect world, it, you know, to build a road, to build an interstate highway system, to build the different expressways around here in Central Florida, and, you know, the turnpike, et cetera, you'd have to have an awful lot of, you'd have to own an awful lot of land to be able to build your own road and charge that fee. Not to mention the fact they're truly, and this has been my, this is why I say this truly is a public service type thing. It's not like you can go out there, it's not like a Chinese restaurant or a pizza shop or whatever, where you might have 20 of them in your neighborhood to go choose from. You can't go and have 20 interstates across the state that you have a choice to every morning. I'm going to say, well, I'm going to use this road because it's the best and it's the cheapest. You don't have that kind of competition in highway construction. There's not enough room out there. You wouldn't be able to do that. So those are, you know, and the fact that very few people, I would be concerned if somebody, one individual owned enough land to own the interstates in the state of Florida. I don't know that I would want one person. If they did, I guess I'd be okay. But I would have I'd have to question why one person would own that much real estate. So I don't think you can compare highway systems to regular competitive the free market in that same sense. So that's one issue there. But then when you get past it, we are being, it's quadruple taxation all over the place. It's a regressive tax. The people who make the least can afford it the least. People, and they're taking money out of the local economy. So for the average family who's out there spending $100 to $200 a month in toll taxes, which is quite common right here in Central Florida, that's money that they didn't spend in the local stores where they would have paid a sales tax too. So, I mean, it's harming us in every which way to that degree.
Yeah.
But it just, there's no excuse. But then, look at all the other taxes. There's nothing that irks me more, and, you know, tell me your opinion of this. Wait a minute. Okay. Rick Scott's going to spend billions of dollars from the BP money to buy land, but he's not, but we don't have money to fix the interstates. And then we have the same thing, using the tourist tax dollars to buy up a church in, to build a soccer stadium ultimately, here in Orlando that we don't want, the people don't want. And we're going to give the soccer stadium to this private entity. We're building it custom made to them, like we really need a soccer stadium in Orlando. And they're going to tear down a black church if they get to go through with the eminent domain they were trying to do and all the games they were playing there. But it's going to be our tourist tax dollars building a stadium or an arena for a private entity. But then they tell me they don't have money for the roads. And why aren't we using tourist tax dollars, some percentage of it, for the transportation system? Doesn't transportation and tourism kind of go hand in hand? Don't those two things have a major impact on each other, or am I missing something?
Well, do you want the short answer on why we're actually building a soccer stadium and handing it over to a private entity? It's because
they wrote
really big checks to lobbyists who in turn made big campaign contributions to guys like Rick Scott in the state legislature. That's really the bottom line. We should not be doing that, period. You talk about state ownership or ownership of land. The state owns roughly 24% of the entire state of Florida. That's a landmass bigger than the entire state of New Jersey. So under those circumstances, that's what we need to be worried about. Why is the state own this much land, and why are they buying up more?
Exactly. And I have asked the question. I asked the question to my state senator, which is Darren Soto. I asked him the question, how much land, how much real estate should the state of Florida own? What percentage of the land should the state of Florida own? Of course, I really didn't get much of an answer. He said it would go on a case-to-case basis as to why they were buying the land kind of thing, which I thought was nonsense. But that was what he came back with. And I'm like, there's no reason for the state. I mean, okay, sure, if we want to go have some designated, either it's a national park, which we shouldn't have national parks, it should be a state park, or we're having different state parks. And, you know, I have no problem with designating some open space that everybody gets to use, like state parks. But that isn't what they're doing here. This is a massive land grab because they want full control. And this total regionalism, the Agenda 21 mentality, I don't know that Rick Scott has a clue that he's doing Agenda 21. Maybe he does. Maybe he's just clueless because all he's doing is thinking about his bank account. I don't know. But it's absolutely outrageous, and we've got to put an end to that too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like we said, the state already owns 24%. How much is enough? I'd actually like to sell off some of that land, and I'm with you. I have no problem with parks. We want parks. We want recreation area. We want preserves. But a quarter of the state and growing is too much. Where do we stop? Do we stop at 50%? Do we stop at 75%? Again, it is a very Agenda 21-driven mindset. Rick Scott, I'm sure he's aware of the mechanisms behind it, and he's looking to make a profit in the meantime off of it. And that's really how he's been from the time that he was at HCA and built Medicare out of $1 billion. That's who the guy is.
Oh, it's so absolutely disgusting. And people need to understand that this is going against the will of the people. It's going against the best interest of the people. He acts like he's brought all these jobs here, but from what I've seen, it's jobs from China. You're bringing the Chinese over here to take over the school systems and everything else. And I mean, it's so disgusting. And so many people, unfortunately, the news media doesn't do anything to talk about this. And the GOP, they don't care. They refuse to listen to the other GOP candidates. They are insisting on pushing him through again, which is also equally disgusting to me. It's absolutely outrageous. But let me get one more thing back when it comes to the transportation stuff.
Well,
to me,
real quick, if I could, you mentioned – I just want to real quick before we move on. You mentioned the jobs that he's brought into the state. You have to understand that Rick Scott is doing the same thing that Barack Obama does with the job numbers. Those recent unemployment rate that he put out at 6.7 or 6.5%, that was because they stopped counting 440,000 Floridians who had stopped looking for work. That's the only reason the unemployment numbers went down. They're fudging the numbers to make it look better, and I can tell you the job market out there is as bad or worse than it was in 2008-2009.
And I totally believe that. And that goes back to the ultimate, which is the accounting of government. The figures don't lie, but the liars do figure. It's a massive game they play.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's the truth. I learned that way back when I first was getting into some accounting stuff. The figures don't lie, but the liars do figure. Because I'm like, wait a minute, they didn't have that much growth this month. Where'd they get that? Oh, they went and did this. They called this. Okay. So I learned that valuable lesson. And this is true at a more national level. I'm not a fan of public trading, but public trading is one of the biggest. They go out there and manipulate those numbers every which way to try to make it look like they've made more money and to give their shareholders all this, and they're sacrificing the whole economy at the same time. I truly think public trading should be probably shut down. I don't know if you have an opinion on that one, but excuse me, that's more of a federal higher up.
Well, I'd,
and
yeah, I wouldn't have any authority in that matter, but I can tell you I am I would like to see an end to the Federal Reserve System, that's for sure, which is the driving factor behind all of that.
Yeah, and that, don't forget that, because there's something else on the state chartered bank thing and something to talk about as well. But I just want to get one last thing in on this transportation. When it comes to the funding of transportation, to me, again, I think it's a public service because the free market cannot go out there and provide you 10 different interstate highways that you can choose every day of what you want to drive on. There's not enough land out there. There's not enough space to do it. You don't have to worry about having any national parks if you do that. So to that degree, I think it has to be a it should be a public service. It's something that's provided just like the military. I can't go out there and hire, well, let's see, I'm going to call up so-and-so and they're going to be my military defense today. You can't do that either. So when you get back to making transportation as least expensive, which does include some form of mass transit as well, not ScamRail, but mass transit, I go back to we ought to be able to take 5 or 10% of that money out of that tourist tax. I hope to lower the tourist tax, too, because I think that it's brutal. But I think we should use that because tourism has a direct impact on transportation. It all plays into it. And if you truly needed a gas tax, that would be much cheaper than a toll tax. And I've done that side-by-side comparison so many times. I ask anybody how much gas you put in there, how many miles you get to the gallon, so how much was your gas tax per mile that you just drove without the toll. Now tell me how much toll tax you paid for that same miles. The toll tax is always substantially higher. You could easily tack on another penny on the gas tax and make it up, even though I'm not proposing that. I don't think we need it. The other is car rental tax. Look what they do to the rental cars. That's another scam. It's similar to the tourist tax. So you can, how much do they tap off of rental cars for transportation? None. Why don't they? Don't they impact transportation? Don't they impact road use? Why is, if you're going to go that route? Again, I think some of those taxes are extreme and abusive and need to be replaced too. But then, worst case scenario, if you really were running low on money, and you wanted to make sure that the people using the roads, as in the drivers, the car owners, we're paying that tax, you would have a truly highway fee at the registration when you registered the vehicle. Based on the size, you could vary it some, and it would be some small amount. You know, $5 a year for at the car registration across the state for every car that's registered in the state of Florida, every motorcycle, et cetera, would put an awful lot of money into it with very little pain to the individual, and we would all be improved. The cost of transportation would go down. Cost of goods would go down. People forget that the cost of living is tied to transportation. So there's these other benefits you would get if, in fact, you need it. I'm not saying you need it because I see the waste out there and the waste of land grabs and things like that. But those are other options to raise the funds if you truly needed it. That's kind of my take. Does that make sense to you?
Well, I don't think that we actually do need to raise taxes, and I am. You mentioned earlier the tax per mile with the GPS black boxes. Yeah, that's absolutely not going to happen on my watch. But I think that I really and truly believe that if we can just cut out, so many of the things we talked about that are just wasteful and fraudulent in the transportation budget. If we could cut those out, there's plenty of money for the highways. There's plenty of money for the state roads. It's just we need to cut out the things that are draining all that money. We don't need to raise taxes to do it by any means. That's what I'm going to look to do to maintain and improve Florida's transportation system without raising taxes by getting rid of the boondoggles and these sweetheart deals to the public-private partnerships. That's where we're going to find the money. We don't need to raise taxes to do it.
And I totally agree. And I'll tell you something. I sure hope at some point, free of charge, as a true citizen, stateswoman, when you get elected, that you somehow bring me into that discussion about transportation, because I am so sick of what they're doing, and I think it, and I mean, I've been saying this for years. This is how I first got into the political arena to begin with, was when they first wanted to put tolls on I-4. I want to stop that toll on I-4. It's nothing. It's just a public-private partnership. It's just money for the cronies. And it's so wrong. And what it is doing, what they do with transportation, I think is symbolic of what they have done across the board. I think you can take every type of cronyism, corruption, self-serving, whatever you want to call it, of what they do in transportation and see the cancer of it throughout this whole state, throughout the country as far as that goes.
Oh, sure. And another prime example is what they're doing with our water resources. You know, they're buying up state land under these land trusts for lands that have freshwater springs on them, putting out millions upon millions of gallons of freshwater directly, in a lot of cases, directly from our aquifer or from our rivers and streams. And they're leasing this land after they purchase it with tax dollars to companies like Nestle Bottled Water, so that they can bottle it and sell it back to us. It's absolutely insane what they're doing, and we don't even make any of the profit on it as the taxpayer. It's just, you know, these special interests that are buying off politicians to make sure this happens. And the Florida Department of Environmental Protection is the enforcement agency on it, just like the FDOT is in cahoots with all these PPPs. That's the sort of thing that we need to stop. And basically our politicians right now think that the state budget, they don't think of it as our money, us the taxpayer. They think of it as their personal monopoly money account that they can throw away and get real money into their campaign accounts, into their wives' company, into their kids' companies, their brother-in-laws, their buddies, you know, and then next thing you know, my son's got a high-paying consultant job with the company that Nestle Water or the PPP behind the toll on I-4, just hired him as a six-figure consultant. So that's exactly what happens every single day up there. That's what we put a stop to. It's the entrenched corruption in Tallahassee. If we just got rid of that, and I can't stress this enough, if we got rid of the corruption, we could provide for all of these critical government services, all the necessary services, the roads, you name it, across the board, we could pay for it, and we could cut everyone's taxes at the same time. That's what we need to do. I don't have any cronies. I don't have any companies that are going to benefit from any state contract. I don't have any friends that are going to benefit from any state contract, anything like that. That's what we need to get in there, and that's what we need to put a stop to. And if we do, we'll see that we can right this ship without having to, you know, it would actually benefit the people of Florida, create jobs, and put more money in their pockets. It's a really simple thing, and everybody says that the government is corrupt, but it isn't until you really dig into the books, when you really start analyzing and following the money, that you realize that we're corrupt somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 to $25 billion per year wasted and fraudulently acquired by these third parties with connections to the politicians. That's what we put a stop to.
We have got to, and I'll tell you, it's just there's so much to it. And this common law grand jury thing, I'm hoping this is going to be a solution, because right now it's just like you said, they take this as their money. They forget that they work for us. They forget that we're the sovereign and that this is our country, that they're only, you know, they are supposed to be working for us. But as it turns out today, we are working for them. People got to understand we have the road to serfdom. The fact is we've already been converted to a bunch of serfs, and most of us don't even know it because we have no rights. They keep controlling us. The lady who is living off the grid down there in Cape Coral, what they've done to that lady, how they stop you from growing vegetables in your own yard, and yet they keep taking all this money. We have become serfs. These people don't seem to know it is our money, and I'm hoping maybe this common law grand jury is some means to truly take it back. I don't know how effective it's going to be. But, I mean, because people say, well, it's the constitutional rights, but paying attention to the Constitution. Who are we going to get to follow it? Right here in Orange County, they've got a charter amendment that they're trying to put out there, massive, trying to put all sorts of things into this in one thing, in one a charter, but apparently now they're having to split it out, where they want, if I'm understanding it correctly, they want to basically do away with the sheriff and make it a appointed, not an elected office, I think, or something crazy like that. They were doing something with the sheriff's office. The only thing that made any sense in any of it was they talked term limits. But then they say they want two more commissioners on the county commission. Why do you need two more commissioners? I say get rid of the expressway authority and make it, it should be the job of the commissioners. You don't have to have a second county agency like the expressway authority. Why aren't your county commissioners doing that to begin with? It's just totally unbelievable some of the stuff they're doing. And we've got to put a stop to it. Something, and I don't know if you heard anything about Orange County here and the sheriff, what they're trying to do with the sheriff's office with term limits.
No, I haven't heard the details on that, but I can tell you that the office of the sheriff is mandated in the Constitution, so they can't do away with the sheriff, but maybe they're talking about consolidating like Duval County and Miami-Dade County have done, where the sheriff's office and police department for the city are integrated. Is that the sort of thing
maybe
they're talking about?
Okay. Maybe that's what
I'm going to have to look into that. I don't know the details.
Yeah, and the truth is I need to dissect it more myself. I know enough to be dangerous at this point with it, but I really got to get into it. And then I found out they were going to all start splitting it all out because nobody's saying, no one's going to vote for this if you have this all in one thing. They're going to say no because there's too much garbage in it. So now they're redoing it. The other thing we're talking about is the Federal Reserve. Now, I think it was either South Dakota, North Dakota, somewhere up in that area where they actually had a state-chartered bank kind of thing, which really allowed the state to help bypass that Federal Reserve system. Are you familiar with what the state charter bank would be, or is that any kind of an option here? What do we do to try to protect ourselves against the Federal Reserve?
Well, I believe it's North Dakota that did the state charter bank. It's something that I would be willing to consider. I'm not a real big proponent of centralized banks in general, so some people that I respect have a lot of put a lot of weight behind their opinions do like the idea. But I can tell you without question, Article 1, Section 10 of the United States Constitution says states shall use no thing but gold and silver coin as a tender and payment of debts. Every state in the union right now is violating the Constitution. What I plan to do to give Floridians kind of a hedge against any potential dollar crisis, any potential inflationary event that, we've got a federal government that's printing money and using it to buy more debt through the quantitative easing process. And that's the same sort of thing that led Zimbabwe to hyperinflation in 2008 and other nations around the world. The Weimar Republic did the same thing. So we're on a path to significantly damaging the purchasing power of the dollar. So what I intend to do is I intend to begin converting some of Florida's reserves into gold and silver coin. I'd also to introduce legislation like Utah did, competing currencies legislation, which would allow for Floridians to transact business in alternative currencies if there was a dollar crisis. I mean, nobody can know for sure. There's no doubt that inflation is inherent in our current currency system. The only question is, how rapidly will it increase? Could there be an event that triggers that inflationary cycle where you wake up one morning and next thing you know, gas is $15 a gallon and bread is $20 a loaf? That could potentially happen. Those sort of events have happened historically in other countries. We are not immune to that thing, especially when we're doing those same type of things through the Federal Reserve System that those other countries did and ended up inflating their dollar to the point where $100 trillion in Zimbabwe currency won't buy you an egg today. So, you know, that's the sort of thing. We need to have that hedge on a state level. And I was happy to see Utah do it. A couple other states are currently looking into it. They have legislation in place regarding competing currencies. And I think that's the right path, because the worst case scenario is Floridians, you know, have now their state money invested in a currency that has been stable in value for over 2,000 years. I don't think that's a bad thing.
Right. Oh, I definitely agree. And that's and most people, and it's sad to say, people aren't, it's not as bad today as it's been in the past, I guess, but most people still don't understand the Federal Reserve is a private corporation. It says federal, but that doesn't mean anything. It's a central bank owned by a bunch of super cronies who will do whatever they can to manipulate this money, this economy, whatever it is on the political realm, and how much they want to destroy this country, which ties into what truly happens with the public trading of stock. They manipulate the economy. We have allowed a few people to control way too much. These people should not have this kind of control. And luckily, some people are starting to get it. You know, people over the years would insult Ron Paul. When I would hear them say this, well, you don't understand what the Federal Reserve is. You don't understand how currency works. You don't, and they really didn't. But in little by little, even, I mean, I think it's kind of funny with Glenn Beck, who I listen to and I follow, and he's been a supporter of many of the things Ron Paul has said, but over the years he would be a little bit more critical of Ron Paul. But little by little he has changed, and I even sent him an email once saying, do you know how much you sound like Ron Paul these days? Because it's true, you know, especially when it comes to his currency.
Well, yeah, and I think more people are waking up to that fact, and because they're seeing it. There's no doubt that we've seen an uptick in inflation recently. Now, they just like they do the unemployment numbers, they fudge them. They make it look rosier than it is. But everybody knows that, you know, it's everything costs more and more and more and more. You know, and it's even seems to be growing at an accelerated rate. And you have to, and you said that the Federal Reserve is a private entity, but it's much worse than that. Congress doesn't even have the authority to review the Federal Reserve's books. That's what, you know, Ron Paul and others have been fighting for, just the opportunity to go in there and audit them. And they've been blocked at every turn. And, you know, the Federal Reserve is probably the most powerful, if you want to call it a branch of government, like you said, it's really not. But they hold so much power over everything because they are literally holding the purse strings, and they reap the benefits from inflating the currency. So it is something that we need to deal with. Like you said, more people are waking up. I do happen to like Glenn Beck. He's wrong on a few things, but for the most part, he's gotten it right on the Federal Reserve system.
Yes, yeah, I definitely agree. And it's just over, and again, it's over years I've heard him, because I've listened to him. I started following Glenn Beck when he was on CNN way back when. And at that time, he was a little bit more critical about certain aspects of Ron Paul's position on things. I don't think he was really knocking him on the currency at some point in there. He really wasn't talking too much about it. But he was knocking him on some things. And he really was supporting Romney, even though he didn't like what they did to Ron Paul at the convention and stuff like that. He was still leaning towards Romney and that kind of stuff. And he has pretty much said he's a libertarian now. I don't know if he actually comes out there and openly says he's libertarian or says, I think he says he's a libertarian now. Doesn't he say that? I don't think he does.
Haven't had much of a chance to listen, but, you know, it does seem like he is on the right path, if nothing else.
He definitely is, and it's great what he has done with truly having a much more open media and pushing people into another direction. So thank God for Glenn Beck out there. I'm happy, and we need more of him out there. But now getting back to the thing on the state charter, if we didn't have the state charter, back in the days, I guess it was Jefferson who warned us time and time again about any kind of central bank. But what do we do? What should it really be without a central bank, without somebody holding the money for the banks to borrow from and all this other stuff? Try to get back where you don't even have such a thing, where you truly get back to true banking versus all this other Federal Reserve stuff. How would we do that in the state if it's even possible?
Well, it's going to take a huge correction because we have so much liquidity out there. We have so much debt out there. It's going to be fixed one of two ways. It's going to be fixed over a 30-year process where we gradually get back to true capital of intrinsic value, and we basically we revalue goods and services to the proper level, and we don't. When I say we revalue, there's no centralized planning in this. This happens organically. This is just through market forces. Or it's going to happen through a catastrophic event. And I hope that's not the way it happens. I hope it's a gradual, smooth process with occasional bumps here and there. Because if it happens through a catastrophic event such as a hyperinflationary cycle or a currency collapse, the dollar loses its status as the world's reserve currency, or OPEC stops transacting oil in dollars, any of those things could be the catalyst for that type of event. If that happens, it is going to get bad. We're going to have a repeat of the Great Depression, and perhaps even worse. The good news is I think we can come out the other side of that, going back to the original concepts of having our currency backed by something of intrinsic value, not creating new money for every dollar of debt that's created, and not stimulating the economy through debt. That has been the driving force behind it, and it's done on the consumer level, it's done on the bank level, it's done on the Federal Reserve level, and it's done on the global level. The bailouts and TARP and international IMF bailouts to Greece and Ireland, these are all systemic of the same situation. The only difference is scale. We create prosperity today, and I say prosperity, quote-unquote, by generating debt. Historically and throughout our entire history, prosperity was created through having something of intrinsic value and exchanging it for something of intrinsic value. And we've gotten totally away from that. And like I said, we either do it gradually over a 30-year process, or it happens, you wake up one day and all of a sudden the economy is over as we know it. Either way, I believe on a state level, competing currencies and converting our state reserves into gold and silver is a step in the right direction or a hedge for that potential catastrophic event.
Well, I'll tell you, I told people a few years back, and I expressed to them, I said, the Great Depression is nothing for what's coming. If we don't change what's going on, that Great Depression is going to look like a piece of cake compared to what I think is going to happen next. And if you want to buy stock in anything, you should probably buy it in value, because there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be depressed and upset. And that's where the money is going to be. That may be the new gold, some type of drug relief or whatever. And I truly do believe that. I don't think people appreciate that. But, again, people are waking up a little bit. Now, I know I do appreciate you taking some extra time here. I've got two last questions for you. I guarantee you, well, I almost guarantee you haven't heard about the one question. The other one I'm sure you've heard some discussion of late in the last couple of days. But are you aware of the problem we have with notary fraud in Florida?
No, actually, I'm not.
Okay. I want to make sure I had one to stump you with.
okay, good.
Yeah,
notary... tell me about that.
Okay, right now there's two bills, thanks to something that I actually got started a little over a year ago now. There's a Senate bill 172 and a House bill 407. My father passed away in October of 2012. He had two live-in caregivers. I had done my best to try to get them out of his house earlier that year, but it's a long story. These people weren't what I would call as caring as what I wanted, but they were there. And after he passed away, it's unbelievable. There's multiple problems that happened here. First off, there was this fraudulent will that magically appeared, and it got recorded in Orange County Courthouse in January of 2013. But this will, last will and testament, was giving my father's property, a double-wide mobile home, to these two caregivers, leaving it all to them. And, of course, you know, I was there to get the small stuff, which it's not like a mobile home is a massive high value. It's not like I'm not going to get rich off or anything crazy like that. But they came up with this fraudulent will that was notarized by a Florida notary. And, again, this thing all showed up December 28th. He died on October. The will came up on December 28th, which happened to be my birthday. And then on December 28th, that the people went down to the DMV, transferred the mobile home from his name to their name, and then on January 9th of 2013, this fraudulent will was filed in the Orange County Courthouse. Orange County has no idea who filed a fraudulent will. But the will, last will and testament, and a lease agreement were both notarized by a Florida notary, Rachel Harvey, DD 989035. And this whole thing started. It's like, what is going on here? My father did not leave this. These people would not move out of his mobile home. They were there as caregivers. This was in the Starlight Ranch mobile home community. They were not tenants. They were not authorized to be there once my father no longer needed care. The mobile home park refused to eject him. And then they go and transfer the title into their name, go enter into an agreement with the mobile home park with a fraudulent title. And then I start finding out what all is happening, and the first thing I do with a fraudulent will is I contact the state of Florida saying, I need to find out. I truly thought the people had counterfeited a notary seal onto this document because all I had was a copy. Well, come to find out, no, she did notarize it. She notarized two documents, but said she only notarized the lease. She didn't know she notarized the will. Yet she was witnessing the signature of five different people. Totally crazy. And, I mean, I'd have to have to send you some of these documents for you to really see this. But it turned out the notary was a friend of the daughter of the two caregivers who were stealing the mobile home. But the state of Florida, the only thing they did was send a letter to the notary saying there's been a question about this notary last will and testament and the lease agreement. She comes up with this crazy answer. I mean, it's the most incompetent response from a notary you could imagine. Yes, I did notarize something, but I don't remember notarizing a will, but I notarized all sorts of things, but this was the first time I ever notarized anything, and I'm sorry if I did it wrong, and I really just want to be a notary so I can do weddings, and I don't remember anything about a lease, but then there were so many papers. I notarized so many papers, but I don't think I did that. I mean, you'd have to read the statement from this notary to realize I'm not exaggerating the craziness of it. This is what this notary came back with, and the state of Florida was going to leave it there. And I said, no, she didn't answer the question. So I sent another inquiry, and the notary never responded. And at this point, I've got the Florida Highway Patrol investigated the title fraud. What they end up being charged with, these two individuals end up being charged with title fraud, identity theft, and grand theft. Now, the Florida Highway Patrol, Department of Motor Vehicles, said the will was never actually produced at the time they transferred the title. But there was a whole other slew of things that was happening where these people were allowed to go into a DMV and transfer the mobile home from somebody else to their own name. Unbelievable what has happened on both sides of this. But the state of Florida, the Orange County, doesn't have a record of who filed a will. Can you imagine, and of course, it's illegal to file a fraudulent document, okay? The Orange County government doesn't know who filed this fraudulent will. So how many wills are filed by anybody down there? And somebody, an elderly person might be dying, doesn't have a clue this is happening, and when they're gone, someone's going to go steal their property. And it's all notarized. So it's notarized. It's got to be true, right? There is absolutely no control over these notaries. They don't keep a journal. That was the only thing that lady provided as a statement. And all they did when she did not respond to the second inquiry, second and third actually, they came back and said, well, we're going to an executive order comes down and suspends her. However, in the letter suspending her, it goes out there and says, in lieu of suspension, you can resign. Resigning makes it look like you didn't do anything wrong. So now she can probably go back out there again. And then the other thing, anybody can be a notary public in the state of Florida. There, it was Channel 9 here locally, WFTV locally here, who was helping me with this, who did an investigative report. There are felons in jail who are active notaries. Can you imagine you're getting things notarized in jail? And the state of Florida doesn't have a problem with that?
That I wasn't aware of.
Absolutely
well,
crazy. If you look. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, it sounds like this came to the right resolution, that these people were charged with fraud and grand theft, and as they should have been. But you're right. It does leave kind of a hole there for the notary. Now, a notary is supposed to, as they're witnessing a document being signed, they're supposed to either, have that person present. They have to sign. They have to witness them signing a document, and they have to either be personally known to them or present a valid identification. So did this woman say that your dad was actually there?
See, I'm not able to get any more information from her. I've requested a copy of the statement she gave to the state attorney's office, but I have not been able to get that. The only audio that I heard of any kind of statement from her was Orange County Sheriff, and that was, if you would listen to it, you would say, that couldn't have been a professional detective doing that kind of interview, because the detective was feeding her answers. The detective didn't want to be bothered with it. And that's no exaggeration. You'd have to listen to it. So Orange County Sheriff isn't exactly, at least not in this case, didn't do too good of a job on this thing here. I've had other questions. I know she didn't notarize it because my father was in the hospital. They picked the wrong date. Had these people not been, because my father was in the hospital a lot in his last year, I was able to prove he was in the hospital about to have surgery and in intensive care. So he didn't notarize that. There was no way he was at that house. I have the proof. So I was able to prove that it was fraud. And at first, there was some indication, one investigator from the Department of Motor Vehicles, Highway Patrol, thought that she had been duped by her friend and there was an imposter sitting there. I don't believe there was an imposter there for a minute. I don't believe that, but I haven't been allowed to see that last statement. So I personally believe this notary conspired with these people to defraud my father's estate. She was just helping her friends out. And so, but I can't get to that part. And now that it's been proven it's a fraudulent transaction, the state does nothing about this notary. And even though right now the only thing, because the notaries in Florida do not have to keep a journal, they are not required to keep any record at all of what they do, the two bills that are out there now at least start to make them accountable that they have to provide have a notary journal and have to keep track of it and provide it as necessary to the state and these types of things. So at least they have a record of every transaction. If they don't have a record, it's going to be deemed to be bogus, basically. So it gives a little bit of option. It's a very small starting point. The really sad part is, on the House bill, 407, the House bill went out there and was requiring a criminal background check and doing some other things with these applicants to make it so that you don't have felons, so that people aren't in jail when they're doing this, to tighten up that process and make sure that people are a little bit more credible. But then somebody came along and pulled it out. They literally took lines 22 to 72 out of the House bill, which all was talking about trying to do a better background check on who was going to be a Florida notary. Just for the heck of it, in the state of Florida, how many notaries do you think we have?
Oh, if I had to take a wild guess, I'd say somewhere in the neighborhood of 20,000.
Try 400,432.
Wow. Wow.
It's a massive revenue stream for this state. They get, I think it's somewhere around 70, 75 bucks a pop, and that's all they care about. I mean, that's my own opinion.
Right.
That's all they're getting.
Yeah, that's
over 400,000. And the other thing, Florida, as I found out through this process, Florida is number one in identity theft, property theft, mortgage fraud, and mortgage/foreclosure fraud. They have robo notaries out there all over the place. And this, you know, it's like, it's unbelievable what is happening out there. At least we're making some progress, but it's not enough. Of course, I guess it never is. But can you just imagine the felons who are in jail are notaries?
Yeah, I had no idea about that one. That's good to know.
It is. It's amazing. Never in my wildest dreams. The only reason I know about it is because I really was the victim, and I wouldn't stop. If I would have, most people, you know, after Florida sent their one stinky little letter, they would have stopped, and I said no. And then I went to the Florida Highway Patrol because it was a mobile home that's registered through the DMV, so I went to them, and they're the ones who truly did the investigation. If I want to, you know, give kudos to anything, it's going to be to the Florida Highway Patrol and the DMV, who went out there and did the handwriting analysis and proved it was fraud and this, and, you know, took on the other steps, and they were the ones that truly got it charges out there. Once they did that part, and I added to the fact that he was in the hospital, he wasn't there, there's no way he did this, then we were able to get some charges. Now, the people played the system. The one lady, the husband and wife deal, she took the plea, and then after she took the plea, she went and gave her statement saying her husband had nothing to do with it, so they dismissed the charges on him, and then they did nothing about this notary. And the notary is a public officer. It's like, wait a minute. She is representing the state of Florida, and you're not going to do anything about it? And you think about the foreclosure problems and the identity theft, and Florida, it's a license to commit fraud. Being a notary in the state of Florida is a license to commit fraud. It really is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. With the robo-signing. And it sounds like in this woman's case, she was either naive to the point of negligence, or she was a participant in the fraud.
It was one or the other. And I'd love to know the real answer.
Yeah.
In either case, she should be. There should be something flagged that she cannot be a notary again.
But right now,
she's not flagged as anything.
Yeah, if it was negligence, that should be the minimum, I would think.
Right. Exactly.
But if it was fraud, she should probably be charged.
That too. But right now, the state of Florida is going to say, yeah, don't worry about it. Just resign. And that's all they're telling her to do. Just resign.
Yeah,
that's outrageous. Okay, one last quick question. I'm just going to put the subject out there, and you can tell me what you're thinking about what's going on with it. And then we're just about out of time anyway. Thank you so much for taking this extra time. This has been some good conversation.
What do you think about
the situation? Hobby Lobby, everything that's going on with Hobby Lobby, the Supreme Court, what do you think about all that stuff that's happening?
You know, that is part of our First Amendment rights. You know, first of all, the federal government is too involved in everything. Whether it's Obamacare, whether it's telling you, you know, a group of individuals what they can or can't do, it's indicative of how far we've let it progress. Bottom line is that the federal government doesn't have that kind of authority. And, you know, I keep going back to the Florida Interstate Commerce Act. That's the kind of thing that would restrict their authority, at least for businesses and groups that are operating exclusively in Florida. But I think once that happens, once we take that step, some other steps, states will do the same thing, and we eventually will have effectively nullified a huge chunk of power that the federal government has usurped. That's really what we need to do. We can no longer rely on the federal government to keep itself within its constitutional boundaries. It's time for the states to step up through the 10th Amendment and through the concept of nullification. It's time that we stand up. And that's really the only way that we're going to get it back. And I kind of view any federal usurpation of power, the states are the states and the people are the backstop to that power, because the three branches are in cahoots at this point. So it's up to the fourth and fifth branches, and that's the states and us, to get it into line. It's really what it boils down to. We can take it to 100 different examples, but that's the answer.
Well, that sounds perfect to me. I absolutely love that whole idea. So far, you know, give and take a little bit what you said on the toll roads, and I understand what you're saying. You don't have a problem if somebody privately owns a toll road. And truthfully, I don't have a problem either if they totally own it and I don't have to pay someplace else for it, but we know that doesn't quite happen, and there is no competition in it. So outside of that, I think I totally agree with everything you've said, and I'm going to do whatever I can, because I really do want change in Tallahassee. We cannot keep it going the way it is. It's that simple. Okay, we're down to just a couple of minutes. Any final words you would like to share with the listeners on why they should, why you decided to run and why they should vote for you?
Well, you know, I think the reason that I decided to run is the reason probably everyone's listening to this program, that I'm angry at the current state of our government, and I want to do something about it. And, you know, the decision I made to stand up and do something about it was to run for governor. But each of us needs to make that decision. What are we going to do about it? Because we can't just sit by and let it happen any further. So I'm going to, again, please, if you like what I had to say tonight, if you're interested in restoring economic freedom and individual liberty, please become one of my precinct captains. That's how we're going to get it done. We'll give you all the tools you need. Go to WileyForGovernor.com, WYLLIEFORGovernor.com, and click on the Help Adrian button, and all the information is there. We'll give you all the tools that you need. All we're asking for is an hour a week. But I don't think I gave a bio on myself. Just real quick, I'll say that I'm a Christian husband, father of two boys, small business owner. I'm the former chairman of the Libertarian Party of Florida, former syndicated talk show host and investigative journalist, youth sports coach, and just really a regular guy. I'm not a rich man. I make a decent living. I, you know, am able to provide for my family in a business that I built from the ground up. And yes, Barack Obama, I did build that. You know, I'm not a politician. I'm a regular person who just wants to fix things, just wants to end the corruption and get back some of our inalienable rights and get back our economic freedom and get government the hell out of our bedrooms, our wallets, our business, and our bodies. That's where we need to be.
And I'm telling you, that is, to me, that is truly the right answer. That's what we need. And as part of that, you don't have a driver's license, right? What was the deal with you and the driver's license in the state?
Oh, boy. I don't know that we have time to get into that, but we talked a little bit about Real ID earlier. Real ID requires you to waive your Fourth Amendment rights in order to be granted the privilege of getting a driver's license. And I refuse to waive my Fourth Amendment rights. So I've been driving for 3 years now without a driver's license. I've probably driven over 60,000 miles in the state of Florida. And I'm daring law enforcement to pull me over because I want the legal standing to stand up before a jury of my peers and explain to them the unconstitutional nature of you know, having to submit your facial, your biometric information to a national database in order to get a little piece of plastic that says you can drive a vehicle. So I'm fighting that battle as well. And if elected governor, I will continue to fight that battle. If you're interested in the details of the story, just Google my name, Adrian Wiley, WYLLIE, and driver's license, and you'll see plenty out there on the internet about it. But
I will do that. And literally, the state of Florida takes your driver's license information and sells it to all the insurance companies.
Exactly, and all kinds of marketers. Yeah.
Yeah, they sell it to whoever, and they say that they do this because they need to. The insurance companies need it for actuaries or something stupid like that. But anyway, we won't get into that right now. But thank you so much. This has been a great discussion. And, yes, we need you in Tallahassee. We need you so badly. So I will definitely sign up to be one of the precinct captains and see what I can do to help you out.
Well, thanks so much, and great talking with all y'all tonight.
Okay. Thank you, and hopefully you will be back on before the election. And with that being said, to everyone, God bless America and God bless Florida. Get involved, seek the truth, know the truth, and we can take back our country and the state of Florida. On that note, thanks again, Adrian, and good night.
Good night.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.